Have you ever been convicted of a crime? That was the first question prosecutor Michael Binger asked Gage Grosskreutz. Yes, Gage said, one. He testified that he lives in Milwaukee and is a certified paramedic. After the death of George Floyd, he said he found himself at a protest in Milwaukee. Someone needed a medic and he had to step in. He said he noticed there were no official medics at these sorts of protests, so he decided to volunteer to do so. He said he treated anyone who needed it, regardless of what side they were on or what political beliefs they held. On August 25th, 2020, he came to Kenosha. He came alone and wasn't part of any group or affiliation.
We're all aware of what was happening in the days following Jacob Blake's shooting. People do have a right to demonstrate, and no way advocating for property damage or anything like that. But given the, I think we all can agree, chaotic situation of those 3 days following Jacob Blake's shooting, there was certainly a propensity for violence, or maybe not just violence, but injuries in general. And so for the same reasons that I stated earlier, I've delivered patients to freighter down here. I'm familiar with the area, and I felt that given my level of experience and knowledge that I could be of assistance to people.
He brought his own medical supplies and also a gun.
I believe in the Second Amendment. I'm for people's right to carry and bear arms. And that night was no different than any other day. It's keys, phone, wallet, gun.
He said he kept it holstered in the small of his back. Once he was in downtown Kenosha, he said he provided treatment to people, like someone who had been hit with a rubber bullet. When he wasn't doing that, he was recording what was going on that night through a Facebook live stream. He recalled when he first saw Kyle Rittenhouse offering medical aid to someone. He may not have known it at the time, but a little while later, he would find himself in the crosshairs of the AR-15 strapped to Kyle. In part one, I covered much of the prosecution's case, and today we're picking up right where we left off with the testimony of Gage Grosskreutz, who ended up being shot in the arm by Kyle Rittenhouse. Kyle is facing multiple charges, including first-degree reckless homicide in the death of Joseph Rosenbaum and first-degree intentional homicide in the death of Anthony Huber. He's also charged with first-degree reckless endangering safety for firing shots at an unknown man who tried to kick him in the head and for shots that were fired at reporter Richie McGinnis. As for what happened to Gage Grosskreutz, Kyle is charged with attempted first-degree intentional homicide. In addition to those, he's charged with curfew violation and possession of a firearm while under the age of 18. If you haven't listened to part one yet, please do so before listening to this one. This is Jillian, and in partnership with Law and Crime, you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 180, part two. I know a lot of people wait until the new year to begin their new workout routines, but you don't need to wait until then to start achieving your fitness goals. With Peloton, working out can be easy, convenient, and dare I say fun? There are so many reasons why I love my Peloton bike. It's extremely convenient and I can work around my schedule no matter how hectic my day is. I can always find at least a 15-minute window to fit in a quick ride. And my other favorite things are the many instructors I have grown to love, as well as the community that you can ride along with. Their instructors curate all sorts of playlists, from country to hip-hop and everything in between. And they have an endless variety of classes, so you'll never get bored. In addition to cycling, there's strength, yoga, bar, meditation, and more. Plus, you get free access to the Peloton app when you purchase a Peloton bike. That's a feature I really love for when I'm not at home and I can take my workouts on the go. Visit onepeloton.com to learn more. Try Peloton classes free for the rest of the year. New members only. Visit onepeloton.com/app to learn more. Terms apply. Peloton, when your workout is a joy, it's a joy to work out. This is it, the putt to win the tournament. If you sink it, the championship is yours. But on your backswing, your hat falls over your eyes. Is this how you're running your business? Poor visibility because you're still relying on spreadsheets and outdated finance software? To see the full picture, you need to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system to power your growth. With visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more, NetSuite is everything you need to grow, all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time while staying ahead of your competition. 93% of surveyed businesses increased their visibility and control after upgrading to NetSuite. Over 27,000 businesses already use NetSuite. And right now, through the end of the year, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind financing program to those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/courtjunkie. Head on over to netsuite.com/courtjunkie for special end-of-the-year financing on the number one financial system for growing businesses. That's netsuite.com/courtjunkie. Gage Grosskreutz testified that he never saw Joseph Rosenbaum that night. But while he was live streaming the events of the night of August 25th, 2020, he heard a series of gunshots a few blocks south of where he was. After seeing people running northbound and hearing people yelling, "Medic," he started running southbound. It was then when he saw Kyle Rittenhouse running with his AR-15. "Hey, what are you doing? You shot somebody?" He can be heard calling out as he ran behind Kyle.
Going back into that moment, that interaction you just had with the defendant, what did you think at the time he said to you?
At the time, I thought that the defendant had said, "I'm working with the police. I didn't do anything."
Now that you've had a chance to review the video, do you know what he actually says?
Yes.
What is that?
After watching the video, he said, "I'm going to the police."
And did he say anything else?
"I didn't do anything," is what I make out from. It's hard to hear from the muffling, but that's what I make out of it.
He said when he thought Kyle said, "I'm working with the police," he found it odd. Gage said he then wanted to find the person who had been shot, so he turned around to look. He didn't go far, and he turned around again and headed back towards Kyle. He said he changed his mind because he started seeing people pointing at Kyle and saying, "He just shot somebody."
So then you turn around and head back north after the defendant?
I wouldn't say after the defendant.
Why did you turn around and head back north after you heard these people say these things?
With what Mr. Balch had said previously, essentially the way that these self-proclaimed militia members were conducting themselves, the gunshots, people yelling for a medic, my interaction with the defendant, and the lack of information that I had gotten from him, and specifically what I had thought I had heard, then coupled with this group of people running northbound, I had essentially made an inference or an assumption that there could be a potential for somebody getting injured. And any time you bring a firearm into that equation, the stakes are much higher for both serious injury and death.
Based on all the factors that you just outlined for us, did you feel like your services might, as a medic, might be more needed in the direction the defendant was headed?
Correct.
He said he thought Kyle was an active shooter. He heard several more gunshots, and Kyle was the only one he saw with a large caliber rifle. He described what he saw next.
I'd seen an individual jump over the defendant, and then the defendant heard two shots, and then from there I saw another individual use a skateboard to hit the defendant, or hold the defendant. Either way, the individual had made contact with the defendant with his skateboard, and then from there I heard another shot, and then, as we can see in this still, an individual.
I want to back up for a second, Mr. Grosskreutz, because we have other video that shows you pulling your gun out before those shots are fired. Do you remember specifically, were you intending, when you pulled your gun out, were you intending to use it?
If I had to, I didn't draw my firearm with a express intent of using it, but also being ready if I had to use it.
He said he saw Kyle fire two shots at an unknown man and then shoot Anthony Huber. Gage pulled out his gun, and with his gun in one hand and his phone in the other, he said he thought he was going to die.
There's a time in this video when you appear to hold your hands up. Do you know about that? Do you recall that?
I do.
Why did you do that?
After Anthony Huber was shot, you can see in the video, I'm not too far behind him. And the defendant had, after murdering Anthony Huber.
The defense objected to the use of the word murdered, and Judge Bruce Schroeder sustained the objection, saying that whether he was murdered is up to the jury to decide.
So you had just seen Mr. Huber get shot?
Correct.
And so what was going on in your mind?
I was very close to the defendant, and I thought there was a high likelihood that I would be shot myself.
A video of that night continued to play. It froze to Kyle, sitting on the ground, pointing his gun at Gage. Gage's hands are raised in the air.
So after you raised your hands like this, you saw the defendant re-rack the weapon?
Correct.
He was asked what he thought was going to happen.
In my experiences and in my inference in that moment, after the defendant had pointed his weapon at me and I had put my hands in the air, re-racking the weapon in my mind meant that the defendant pulled the trigger while my hands were in the air, but the gun didn't fire. So then by re-racking the weapon, I inferred that the defendant wasn't accepting my surrender.
He was asked why he didn't shoot Kyle first, and he said it's not the kind of person he is, and not why he was out there. When Kyle shot him, he was hit in his right bicep.
I effectively lost a large majority of my right bicep.
He said he never fired his gun that night at any point. A video was shown of Gage on the ground freaking out. A huge chunk of his arm is missing. On cross-examination, Gage was asked if he remembers telling the police that at some point, his gun fell off his waist. Corey Sharafasi, Kyle's attorney, asked why he lied. Gage said he didn't lie. "But you took it out and were running with it in your hand," Sharafasi said. "That's correct," Gage responded.
"You didn't drop your firearm. You were chasing Mr. Rittenhouse with your gun, right?" You were chasing him with your gun, yes?
No.
You didn't chase him down Sheridan Road, pulling your gun, chasing after him. That's a lie. You're saying that didn't happen?
I'm not saying that it didn't happen, but I wasn't chasing the defendant.
You were running after him?
No.
No. Okay. Did you ever get charged for not telling the truth to the police about dropping your gun?
No.
Did you ever tell the police in here on this statement that you actually had a firearm in your hand and pointed it at the defendant?
No, I did not.
You never told him you had a gun at all in terms of as you had an interaction with Mr. Rittenhouse. True?
That is correct.
Sharafasi pointed out that Jason Lakowski said he picked up Gage's gun and that there was one in the chamber. Would he dispute that? He asked. Gage said no, he didn't remember. Sharafasi asked if he's a member of the People's Revolution, and Gage said no, but he has some affiliation with them. He agreed that within 6 hours of being shot, he had an attorney and wanted to stop talking to the police. Sharafasi also pointed out that he's asking the city and county of Kenosha for $10 million.
Did you read this?
I did.
So are you aware in this document, you never mentioned that you actually possessed a firearm? You know that?
That is correct.
You left that part out, right?
That is correct.
Judge, I would move 62.
Is there objection?
No.
Received.
You then had, shortly thereafter, I want to say in October, I'm going to show you what is Exhibit 63. You have now filed a lawsuit in federal court. Is that right?
That is correct.
Did you read that?
Yes, I did.
Okay. In that document, you again failed to mention that you possessed a firearm. Is that right?
That is correct.
So you, in these documents that you are filing with courts, you are leaving out the fact that you had possessed a firearm when you were shot. Right?
That is correct.
Sharafasi pointed out that how this case turns out affects how much money Gage could be awarded. He agreed. So if Kyle is convicted, your chances of getting $10 million is better, Sharafasi said. Gage replied that he's not entirely sure how that works. When asked if he had been charged for unlawfully carrying a firearm that night, he said no. Sharafasi then walked through what happened and said Gage took his gun out and ran after Kyle. Gage said that wasn't true. Sharafasi then showed him a photo of him from the back, where it looks like he is digging into his back waistband. Gage again denies that he was chasing Kyle.
So with him 30 feet ahead of you running away from you, at that point you pull your firearm and begin to chase him, correct?
No.
You don't begin to chase him?
Nope. No, I do not.
You head in the direction that he's running. Yes?
Correct.
But you just happen to be running in that direction? It has nothing to do with Kyle Rittenhouse running in that direction?
No, it does have to do with the defendant running in that direction, yes.
Okay, so you are trying to chase him down?
No.
Gage said he could hear people yelling at that point to get him, get his ass. He acknowledged that those people were chasing Kyle and that it was growing bigger as it went. He also acknowledged he saw someone go over to Kyle, potentially kicking him in the face. He then saw Anthony Huber hit him in the head with his skateboard. He said he partly wanted to intervene because he felt like Kyle was in serious danger of getting hurt. He told police that he told Anthony to stop hitting him with the skateboard, but he said in hindsight, he doesn't believe that was true. He doesn't think he really said that. As for why he didn't tell officers he had a gun, he said he had just gotten out of surgery when detectives arrived at the hospital to question him. He said he was sedated and on pain meds. He didn't leave anything out on purpose. He did, however, admit that he refused to answer where he worked. He said he refused because he was worried for his safety. He was interviewed again in September. He brought his attorney, and he wouldn't answer any questions about the shooting.
You don't answer any questions about the shooting, do you?
No, I do not.
This lead detective on a homicide case, where you are also shot, is trying to gather information to figure out exactly what went on, and you refuse to answer questions about that, right?
About specifically about the shooting?
Yeah.
That is correct.
Was that your decision or your lawyer's decision?
That was the advice that my counsel gave me.
Sharafasi then walked Gage through the video of Kyle running through the street after shooting Joseph Rosenbaum. When Kyle falls to the ground, Sharafasi pauses the video and points out a man who had just run up to him.
You agree that he runs up to Mr. Rittenhouse and then applies the brakes, right?
I do.
Okay, and you'd agree that he's feet, me to you away.
And it's a fair assessment, yes.
2-3 feet. He's advancing on Mr. Rittenhouse, and you'd agree he puts his hands up, and Mr. Rittenhouse never fires his gun. Correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, you're off screen here at this point, right? You haven't come into the frame yet?
No, I have not.
Okay. That is, for lack of a better term, this gentleman right here. This is Junkin Man, right?
I believe so, yes.
So, you can play it. So, you now see that Junkin Man kicked Mr. Rittenhouse in the face, and two shots are fired, correct?
With this video, yes.
Okay.
He plays the video again. Anthony Huber can then be seen hitting Kyle on the head with his skateboard. Gage identifies himself coming into the frame and agrees that he's running. Another shot is fired, and Gage, as he is running up to Kyle, ducks down.
We just heard a shot, yes?
Correct.
Okay. And to be fair, that you put on the brakes, right? You were running, you then almost stop in your tracks. Fair enough?
Correct.
Okay. And I don't know if your arms are up at that point, but it looks like you're kind of protecting your head at that point. Is that fair?
That is correct.
Okay. How far do you think you are away from him at that point, to the best of your ability?
I would say about there, between...
me and you?
You and I, correct.
So, 3 feet?
3 to 5.
Okay.
Sharafasi plays the video for another second and then stops it again. Gage's hands are up. He plays it again and stops it right away.
At this point, you're holding a loaded chambered Glock 27 in your right hand. Yes?
That is correct, yes.
You are advancing on Mr. Rittenhouse, who is seated on his butt, right?
That is correct.
You're moving forward, and your right hand drops down with your gun. Your hands are no longer up, and now the gun is pointed in the direction of Mr. Rittenhouse. Agree? I'll give you a picture. Maybe that'll help.
He pulled up a photo of Gage from right before he was shot. He's in front of Kyle, who is still on the ground, pointing his gun upwards.
You'd agree your firearm is pointed at Mr. Rittenhouse, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And once your firearm is pointed at Mr. Rittenhouse, that's when he fires his gun. Yes?
No.
Sir, look, I don't want to... Does this look like right now your arm is being shot?
That looks like my bicep being vaporized, yes.
Okay. And it's being vaporized as you're pointing your gun directly at him. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, so when you were standing 3 to 5 feet from him with your arms up in the air, he never fired, right?
Correct.
It wasn't until you pointed your gun at him, advanced on him, with your gun, now your hands down, pointed at him, that he fired, right?
Correct.
Sharafasi also brought up a tweet Gage had sent out on November 6th during the trial, which said, "Make sure you look and listen for the defendant's firearm malfunctioning. Winky emoji face." Sharafasi asked what the winky emoji face meant. Gage said he had just been replying to somebody. There's no one-size-fits-all solution when it comes to hair care. A product that works wonders for curls might make straight hair limp and greasy. I have a few hair issues that I deal with, including frizzy hair after it dries, and I color my hair a lot, so it tends to get pretty dry. But thanks to my personalized Pros routine, I can honestly say I've noticed a difference. Pros makes custom hair care that's effective because it's personal. Using natural ingredients with proven results, Pros customizes every product in your routine, from shampoo to supplements. So, how does it work? First, you take their online quiz, which first asks you some questions about you as a person. There were some unexpected questions in there, like what my eating habits are and what my zip code is. Pros then will analyze your answers and determine what unique blend of ingredients should be in every product of your custom routine. I started using their shampoo and conditioner a few weeks ago, and my hair is noticeably less frizzy and feels more moisturized than it has in a long time. So try it out. If you're not 100% positive that Pros is the best hair care you've had, they'll take the products back, no questions asked. Pros is the healthy hair regimen with your name all over it. Take your free in-depth hair consultation and get 15% off your first order today. Go to pros.com/court. That's PROSE.com/court for your free in-depth hair consultation and 15% off. 5G is here, but the big carriers want you to sign a pricey long-term contract to get in on it. Not anymore, because Straight Talk Wireless has rolled out 5G coverage nationwide, with plans starting at just $35 a month and no contract, all on America's best networks. Plus, get the latest smartphones from brands like Samsung. Or you can bring your own phone and keep your number and 5G network just by swapping your SIM card. 5G coverage, 5G phones, less money. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Available at Walmart and Walmart.com. 5G capable device required. Actual availability, coverage, and speed may vary. Keep your own phone requires a compatible unlocked phone and Straight Talk KYOP kit. May need to change phone's APN settings. Kristan Harris, editor of The Rundown Live, was also live streaming that night. He was asked about a dumpster that had been pulled to the middle of the street and lit on fire. Video was shown from his live stream, where Ryan Bulch goes over to the dumpster, but gets sort of shooed away by the crowd, who tells him to protect his property, not the streets. Kristan can be heard trying to keep the peace, telling the protesters that Ryan and the others with the guns only want to protect their property, that they have no issues with them. Kristan then tells Ryan to stay by the property and to not say anything that could inflame the crowd. Kyle can then be seen going and moving the dumpster to the side of the road. Kyle and Kristan then interact. Kyle says he's a medic, and Kristan tells him that the crowd has their own medics. He also tells Kyle that he might have his own intentions, but that the protesters don't see it that way.
So you made a comment there about how they don't look at you that way or something along those lines. What did you mean by that?
A lot of the protesters identified the armed citizens as counter-protesters. They didn't identify them as just protecting their property.
On Cross, he was again asked about his conversation with Kyle.
You had said to Mr. Rittenhouse, I know you're just trying to make peace, right?
Correct.
Okay, so to be fair, he wasn't doing anything aggressively, correct?
I agree with that.
He wasn't verbally threatening anyone?
No, he was offering help.
He wasn't using his firearm in a way to scare or intimidate people by pointing it at them. Agreed?
Agreed.
Detective Ben Antaramian told the jury that on the night of August 25th, 2020, the Kenosha Police Department had a plan for the downtown area protests.
We had dedicated SWAT teams along with, we call them CDIRT, but essentially a riot team. We had dedicated units that were assigned to respond to specific calls. So if there was a fire, we'd have a dedicated SWAT team or SWAT response along with a riot team to ensure that whatever problem we had could be properly handled.
He said there were enough resources for police to respond as quickly as possible. Carrie Ann Swart testified that she was engaged to Joseph Rosenbaum at the time of his death. She told the court that he had been in the hospital for 2 days prior to August 25th, that he had just been released that day, and that they were staying at a motel. She said he didn't tell her where he was going that night, but that he told her he would see her in the morning. She said she told him not to go downtown, that the entire city seemed like it was up in flames. She wasn't sure if he knew that or not. The prosecutor showed her a photo of him from the night of August 25th. She identified the plastic bag in his hand and said it was the one he got from the hospital that he had put his belongings in. She was asked if Joseph had been able to procure his medication that day, and she said no, that he wasn't able to fill his prescriptions because the Walgreens closest to them had been boarded up and closed down due to everything that was going on. On cross, the defense followed up on this.
But you had answered some questions from Attorney Krause regarding Joseph taking medications that day.
Correct.
Mr. Rosenbaum. Sorry.
Thank you.
And that Mr. Rosenbaum had taken medications that day?
Correct.
Okay. Do you know what they were?
No, I only know some of them. I don't remember all of them.
Do you know, can you tell us the sum that you know he took?
Gabapentin was one.
I'm gonna stop you for 1 second. Do you know what he takes that? Did you know what he took that for?
Bipolar disorder.
Okay. Any other medications that you know that he took?
I know he was on an antidepressant. At that time, I don't know which one they had him on.
Okay.
And then something for sleep.
Okay, to be fair to you, the only medication that you know by name was gabapentin.
Mm-hmm.
And you are telling us that you know he took that for his bipolar disorder.
Correct.
James Armstrong is the senior forensic imaging specialist at the Wisconsin Crime Lab. He introduced for the jury perhaps the clearest videos of the shooting of Joseph Rosenbaum. They were aerial drone videos, and in slow motion, it shows Joseph chasing Kyle through the parking lot. As they reach the parked cars, Kyle turns around and fires. Joseph falls to the ground, and Kyle runs around a car. On cross, Kyle's attorney, Mark Richards, questioned when the videos had come to light.
The exhibits we've just shown the jury, 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, and 86, correct me if I'm wrong, but you began working on putting them together on Friday.
I began working on them on Sunday.
Okay. When did the crime lab receive them?
The crime lab received that as a submittal on Sunday.
Okay. And who submitted them to you?
It was ADA Jim Cross.
Okay. And you're familiar with the fact that we didn't receive these videos until Friday of last week?
I was informed that that was the circumstance, yes.
Armstrong said he didn't alter the video aside from zooming in and slowing it down. Dr. Doug Kelly is a forensic pathologist who conducted the autopsies of Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber. He said Anthony Huber died from a gunshot wound to his chest. Joseph Rosenbaum died from multiple gunshot wounds. One shot was to Joseph's pelvis. Another grazed the top of his head. Another entered the center of his back. And another went through his left hand. That one likely ricocheted off the ground and then hit his thigh. Dr. Kelly told the court that the first shot was to the groin from about 4 feet away. The second was to his hand. And then he couldn't tell the order of the other two, although he said they would have occurred after Joseph was in a horizontal position.
And so in looking at the video and paying attention to his body position when I heard the discharge of the weapon, I was at least able to say that the only time during the interaction in which he could have incurred the gunshot wounds to the back and to the right side of the head is when he's more horizontal. And the only time that that happens is the last two gunshot wounds.
All shots, aside from the one to his hand, were likely fired from between 1 and 4 feet away. He called the wound to Joseph's hand a complex wound and said there was a fair amount of soot in the wound.
This wound does have soot associated with it. There's a fair amount of soot to the, like I said, the palmar surface of that hand. So clearly this wound represents something closer to what I called a close range gunshot wound. As I said, this is a close range injury. So his hand is in close proximity or in contact with the end of that rifle.
On cross, he agreed that Joseph had forward momentum when he was shot. Before the defense began their case, Judge Schroeder told the jury that he was dismissing the violation of curfew charge, which had been the seventh count. The state officially rested, and the defense started their case by calling Nicholas Smith to the stand. Nicholas told the court that he used to work at CarSource and that one of the owners had called and asked him to help protect the business. One of its three locations had been burned after the first night. He said the owner, Sam Kindry, had told him he would pay him.
When I had arrived at the location, he said he would throw me some money to split between the guys that were helping us.
And did he ever do that?
No, he did not.
So you hug Sam, you talk to him for a little bit. What does he do, if anything, in terms of end up helping you guys with buildings and things like that? Getting into buildings, anything like that?
He gives me a set of keys to the 59th Street location.
So that's the car doctor location?
Car doctor, yes, correct.
Okay. So he hands you a set of keys so you can go in?
Correct. Well, he had actually, we talked briefly, and then he said he was actually heading home, and that his brother Sal would give us a ride over to the 63rd Street location because he was locking up, and that his brother Sal would give me the keys.
And did you end up meeting up with his brother Sal?
Correct. His brother was there.
And did his brother Sal then give you the keys?
Correct.
He said he was stationed on the rooftop that night. Kyle was on the ground. He did not see Joseph Rosenbaum, nor did he witness any of the shootings. After Dominic Black got a phone call, he said they needed to leave, that things were getting hectic, and so they all left the rooftop.
So when you get off the roof, do you see Kyle Rittenhouse?
Yes, I do.
And where do you see him?
Inside the shop, sitting down.
And how does he look to you?
Sweating, pale.
Does he say anything?
He repeats, I just shot someone, over and over. And I believe at some point he did say he had to shoot someone.
He told Kyle to walk outside and turn himself in. Nicholas said he left after that because he was afraid the protesters would come to that location now. Nathan DeBruin, a freelance photographer, took several photos that night, and he happened to witness the shooting of Anthony Huber and Gage Grosskreutz. Kyle's attorney, Mark Richards, walked with him through the photos he took that night. At the time, he didn't know who Joseph Rosenbaum was, but after the fact, he was able to go back through his photos and identify him in several. In one, Joseph is standing in the street by a gas station, near where a group of people had set a bunch of cones on fire. Nathan testified that Joseph appears to be in an angry stance. In another photo, Joseph is walking to a construction lot, and Nathan said that was just before he tipped over a porta potty. He said after he watched Joseph and another man tip over the porta potty, the men went over to a trailer and pushed it into the road, then tipped it on its side and lit it on fire. He said Joseph grabbed protective chains that were dangling from it and armed himself with them. He also said he saw a dumpster on fire that night, and when it was put out, he recalled one person in particular being very angry.
Did you recognize or notice anybody's specific reaction at that time?
I did, Mr. Rosenbaum.
Okay, describe that, please.
He was very agitated. He was yelling, "Fuck the police," over and over and over. "I'm not afraid to go back to jail." And "shoot me, N-word, shoot me, N-word."
But he was using the whole word?
Correct.
At a Black Lives Matter rally?
Correct.
And he had to be held back from attacking people. Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement.
Overall.
He described seeing Kyle running southbound into a CarSource parking lot.
I heard what seemed to be like a firework. And then I heard, I could tell between them, there was multiple gunshots.
And then what did you observe?
I observed Kyle walking down the same driveway that I witnessed him going up and then pick up his pace as he continued northbound on Sheridan Road.
Okay. Was anybody taking note of Kyle as he headed in the northward direction on Sheridan?
There was people screaming at him and also following him.
Okay. Did you see anybody run up to him?
I did.
Okay. And how close were you to Kyle when this individual ran up to him?
15 feet, maybe.
Okay. And that individual who ran up to him, what happened?
What I seen was an individual run up to him with a skateboard and swing it at him, letting go of the skateboard, and it hit Kyle between the neck and I would say the mid-back. And the skateboard, I don't know if Kyle kicked it because he was running when the skateboard fell, but the skateboard flew off to the side.
Okay. And did that knock Kyle to the ground?
Just some bleeding.
Just tell us what you saw, sir.
He stumbled. He wasn't necessarily on the ground at that point.
Okay. And then what did you observe?
The next thing I observed was, at the time I did not know who it was. Now I can say Anthony Huber. It looked like he was trying to subdue Kyle. And that's when everything happened in a matter of a second. That's when Kyle turned, it looked like he turned, because Kyle was on the ground at this time, and that's when he kind of turned and he released one shot and it hit Anthony Huber in the chest.
Okay. Did you see Anthony Huber do anything with his skateboard as he's trying to, as you said, subdue Kyle?
Yes, he also whacked him. I don't know if it was on his head or like his neck area again.
Okay, this is all happening very fast.
Yes, it did.
He described what he saw when Kyle fell to the ground.
I observed two gentlemen run up to Kyle. One, it looked like, was trying to hop on top of him and take his gun. And the other was hesitant of approaching him. But then Kyle Rittenhouse fired a shot and it hit Anthony Huber.
Okay. Did you see anything after that?
He, who I now know as Gage, took a couple steps forward towards Kyle and, with a gun, and Kyle shot him in the bicep.
Did you see what Gage Grosskreutz was doing with his hands?
Yes, he had a firearm in his hand.
You could see that?
Yes, I could see that.
And he was approaching Kyle with a firearm in his hand?
I don't know if he was running with it, but once he got up to Kyle, I did see the firearm. Mr. Grosskreutz's back was towards me. Well, it was at an angle. I wasn't directly behind him, so I only could see one of his hands.
Okay. And describe what you saw happen.
He had his firearm out, pointing at Kyle.
Okay. And as the gun's pointing at Kyle, what happened?
Kyle shot Mr. Grosskreutz.
Nathan told the court that he was originally subpoenaed by the state and met with prosecutors.
There was some tension in that room, correct?
There was.
And they weren't happy with what you were telling them. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement.
I'm going to ask, A, it is leading, and B, I want no reaction. Facial reaction, please.
Describe your meeting with Mr. Binger and Mr. Kraus in their office.
I object to relevance.
Overall. Answer it.
Please.
I don't know the date off the top of my head, but I was called down to the district attorney's office. I met with Mr. Binger and I don't remember his name.
The individual who's
in the blue. And I was called into a room, sat at a table, handed my police statement, got to read over my police statement. And then I was asked if I would like to add anything, to the police statement. And I said I would not. Mr. Binger pulled out a cell phone and showed me a video and also a photo, which was actually one photo that I brought today, and asked me to if I knew who a gentleman was in that photo, and I said I did not. And he asked me to, he said, this is Joshua Zeminski. Mr. Binger also has a case with him, and I am subpoenaed for that case also. And he says, well, that's who that is. He put the phone down, he picked the phone back up and says, who is this? And I confusingly said, like, Joshua Zeminski. And he's like, would you like to add that to your statement? And I just felt I didn't want to change my statement.
Okay. And as a result, what did you do?
I hired an attorney.
Kyle Rittenhouse took the stand on day 7 of the trial. He told the court that he's currently studying nursing and that at the time of the shootings, he lived in Antioch, Illinois, with his mom and 2 sisters. While he admitted that he was not a certified EMT, he discussed his certifications that he does have.
I was a police explorer for Grays Lake Police Department, and I was a firefighter EMT cadet for Antioch Fire Department.
Did you have any training in life-saving, anything like that?
Yes.
What?
I was a certified lifeguard. I am a certified lifeguard and swim instructor. I am certified in Stop the Bleed, CPR, AED, automatic external defibrillator, and basic life support.
At the time of the shootings, he was working as a lifeguard at the Recplex in Kenosha County. He testified that he came to Kenosha for work on August 24th. After work, he went to his friend Dominic Black's dad's house. He said they watched videos on social media of the car source lot being burned down. He saw a police officer get a brick thrown at his head and a mattress store owner getting knocked out. He told the court that the next day, he and his friends met Sam and the owner of CarSource. They exchanged numbers, and he said he told Sam to call him if he needed some assistance later that night. He said he and his friends, which included Dominic Black and Nick Smith, decided to go downtown that night to watch over CarSource and make sure there were no fires. He gave Nick his bulletproof vest he had gotten from the Grays Lake Police Department and told him he could wear it that night since he was going to be focused on administering first aid. When they arrived downtown, he said Sam, Sal, and their uncle were there. Sam and Sal thanked them for coming out to help, and Sal drove them to CarSource lot number 3. A photo was shown to the jury of the group of men with guns with Sal.
You did not know the owner of CarSource previously?
I did not.
Was he being nice to you guys? Was he happy you were there? Was he mad at you for being there? Describe it.
He was happy we were there.
Okay. And you heard their testimony, the 2 owners. I believe that was Friday afternoon.
I did.
And did they give you permission to be there?
They did.
Kyle was asked if there was any friction between his group and the protesters/rioters?
No. The only type of stuff that happened was the person that attacked me first threatened to kill me twice.
Okay. And the person who threatened to kill you, we now know, is Mr. Rosenbaum, correct?
Yes.
He said in one instance, he and Ryan Bulch were walking down the street, and Joseph Rosenbaum had a steel chain and a blue mask around his face. He said he and Ryan were seeing if people needed medical help, and Joseph screamed, "If I catch any of you fuckers alone, I'm going to kill you." The next time he said Joseph threatened him was outside of the car source. He said he doesn't know if it was directed at him, but he heard Joseph say to others in his group, "I'm going to cut your fucking hearts out and kill you." N-words. He said he witnessed Joseph with who he now knows as a man named Josh Zeminski tip the porta potty and trailer over and try to set them on fire. He described the medical help he provided for people that night, A lady hurt her ankle and he wrapped it. Someone had thrown a chemical bomb and Ryan Bulch was affected, and so he helped flush his eyes out and drink some water. At one point in the night, he said Dominic Black called him and told him he needed to go and put out some fires at one of the other car source locations. He said he went to a gas station and asked for a fire extinguisher. He said he took it and started running towards the car source location. He said he would run part of the way and then jog. He would call out and ask if anyone needed a medic on the way. No one did. He said he didn't notice Joseph Rosenbaum until Joseph came out from behind a car and ambushed him.
As I'm walking down Sheridan Road, I hear somebody scream, "Burn in hell." And I reply with friendly, friendly, friendly to let them know, hey, I'm just here to help. I don't want any problems. I just want to put out the fires if there are any. I continue walking, and then I notice the Duramax. I notice a flame in the back seat of the Duramax, and I step towards the Duramax, and as I'm stepping forward, I believe his name is now Joshua Zeminski. He steps towards me with a pistol in his hand, and as I'm walking towards to put out the fire, I drop the fire extinguisher and I take a step back.
Okay. When you step back from Mr. Zeminski, what's your plan?
My plan is to get out of that situation and go back north down Sheridan Road to where the car source lot number 2 was.
And did you get back? Were you able to go in a northerly direction?
I wasn't.
Describe what happens.
Once I take that step back, I look over my shoulder and Mr. Rosenbaum was now running from my right side. And I was cornered from in front of me with Mr. Zeminski. And there were three people right there.
Take a deep breath, Kyle.
Judge Schroeder ordered a recess. When court resumed, Kyle continued.
Once I got to that car and I stepped forward to put that fire in the Duramax out and Mr. Zeminski stepped towards me, I went to go run south, back south down Sheridan, and Mr. Rosenbaum was right there at the corner of the Duramax starting to chase me, and that's when I realized the only place I can run with the people around me is straight towards the building of the car source lot number 3.
When you saw Mr. Rosenbaum, that's when you said friendly, friendly?
When I heard burn inside, I don't know exactly where I was at in the time for that.
Did Mr. Rosenbaum say anything to you?
No, Mr. Zeminski instructed Mr. Rosenbaum to get him and kill him. That's what I heard.
And you go running what's been referred to the southwest corner of car source?
Yes.
And as you're running in that direction, describe being chased. What was happening?
As I'm running in that southwest direction, Mr. Rosenbaum throws, I know it's a bag now, but when he threw it at me with the light, it looked silver and it looked like the chain when he threw it at me. I turn around for about a second while continuing to run, and I point my gun at Mr. Rosenbaum.
Does that stop him from chasing you?
It does not.
Okay. after you turn around and you had your hands up kind of in a low ready position?
Yes.
And you see Mr. Rosenbaum coming at you?
Yes.
And what do you do then?
After he throws the bag and he continues to run, he's gaining speed on me. A gunshot is fired from behind me, directly behind me. And I take a few steps, and that's when I turn around. And as I'm turning around, Mr. Rosenbaum is, I would say, from me to where the judge is, coming at me with his arms out in front of him. I remember his hand on the barrel of my gun.
He said there was no space for him to continue to run, so he turned around and saw Joseph lunging at him. He said he believes he shot him 4 times.
And after you shot him, what did you do?
The people around the cars that were originally there were not there anymore. They moved away, and I ran around to see if I could help Mr. Rosenbaum.
And when you got to Mr. Rosenbaum, what was happening?
Mr. McGinnis he took off his helmet and slammed it on the ground and took off his shirt, and I don't remember what he said. I wasn't focused on that. I was in shock, sort of.
Let me back up a second. Did you know Mr. McGinnis was even around?
I didn't.
Okay. And he says something to you, and what do you do?
I pull out my phone, and I call Dominic Black.
And you call Dominic, and what do you say?
I told him I just shot somebody. I had to shoot him.
And what do you do then?
I now know it to be Kelly Zeminski, Joshua Zeminski, and I don't know the other people who were screaming, get his ass, get his ass, get him, get him, get him.
He said he headed down Sheridan Road so he can turn himself into police. He saw Jason Lukowski and said he remembers telling him he just shot someone and needed help getting to the police. He said there wasn't a crowd, but a mob that was now chasing him. He doesn't remember what Jason said, but he continued to run after hearing people scream, get him, kill him.
The next thing I remember is Anthony Huber striking me in the head with a skateboard.
Okay. As you sit here today, do you remember talking to Gage Grosskreutz?
Yeah, sort of, a little bit. I didn't know it was Gage Grosskreutz when he came up to me, but sort of.
Okay. And when this individual runs up to you and gets, how close?
I would say within a foot.
Did you shoot him?
I did not.
Did you point your gun at him?
I did not.
Why not?
I didn't see him as a threat to my safety or life.
Okay, was he armed at that time?
Not that I noticed.
Okay, and you continue running in a northerly direction down Sheridan Road?
Correct.
And as you're running in that direction, you said the next thing you remember is Anthony Huber.
Yes.
Describe that.
Anthony Huber, what I remember is running past Anthony Huber, and as I'm running past Mr. Huber, he's holding his skateboard like a baseball bat, and he swings it down, and I block it with my arm, trying to prevent it from hitting me, but it still hits me in the neck. And as I block it, it goes flying somewhere off in the distance.
And do you stop then?
No.
What do you do next?
I keep running down Sheridan Road towards the police line.
Then what happens?
I get lightheaded. I almost pass out, and I stumble and hit the ground.
He said he remembers the bumpiness of a rock hitting him in the back of the head.
Now, after being struck with Mr. Huber's skateboard, you end up on the ground.
Yes.
You're on the ground. What's the first thing you remember?
As I'm on the ground, there are people around me. I don't recall how many, but I remember moving my rifle in their direction, and they back off besides one person.
Okay. When you noticed people by you, you said you move your rifle in their direction?
Yes.
Did that individual keep coming?
The last person did.
Okay. The people that stopped, what did you do to them?
Nothing.
Okay. And you're saying the last person in that group continued to come at you?
Yes.
And describe what happened.
The last person, I don't know his name. I don't think he was ever identified. Jumps at me with his, he was wearing boots, I believe. And as he's running at me and jumping, as his boot is making contact with my face, I fire two shots at him.
Why did you shoot at him?
I thought if I were to be knocked out, or he would have stopped my face in if I didn't fire.
He said immediately after he was kicked in the face, he tried to get up, but Anthony Huber ran over.
I'm on my back, and Mr. Huber runs up. As I'm getting up, he strikes me in the neck with his skateboard a second time.
Then what happened?
He grabs my gun, and I can feel it pulling away from me, and I can feel the strap starting to come off my body.
And what do you do then?
I fire one shot.
And after you fire striking, we now know, Mr. Huber, what do you do?
I lower my weapon, and I see Mr. Grosskreutz with his hands up, and as I'm lowering my weapon, I look down, and then Mr. Grosskreutz, he lunges at me with his pistol pointed directly at my head.
Now, you heard Mr. Grosskreutz's testimony about re-racking?
Yes.
Did you re-rack your weapon?
I did not.
After he shot Gage, he said Gage was no longer a threat. There was one other guy in front of him at that point, but his hands were up. He said he briefly pointed his gun at him, got up, and the man backed away. He said he didn't shoot him. He started walking towards the police line to turn himself in. He put his hands up. He said he couldn't hear anything and his vision was narrow. He saw the flashing lights. He said he occasionally tried to move his rifle behind him so the police wouldn't see him as a threat. As he walked towards the window of a police cruiser, he told the officer he just shot somebody. The officer told him to get the fuck back or else he would be pepper sprayed. He said he told him to go home. He said he went back to the other car source location. He was in shock and freaking out. He said he had just been attacked and his head was spinning. The Kenosha Police Department was barricaded off with a fence, and so he went to the nearest police department that he knew of, which was in Antioch, Illinois. Dominic drove him to his house, and he met with his mom and sisters. His mother then drove him to the Antioch Police Department, where he turned himself in. On cross-examination, Prosecutor Binger asked if he intended to kill everyone he shot at that night. Kyle said no. He intended to stop the people who were attacking him.
By killing them?
I did what I had to do to stop the person who was attacking me.
By killing them?
Two of them passed away, but I stopped the threat from attacking me.
By using deadly force?
I used deadly force.
That you knew was going to kill?
I didn't know if it was going to kill them, but I used deadly force to stop the threat that was attacking me.
You intentionally used deadly force against Joseph Rosenbaum, correct?
Yes.
You intentionally used deadly force against the man who came and tried to kick you in the face,
yes.
Correct? You intentionally used deadly force against Anthony Huber, correct?
Yes.
You intentionally used deadly force against Gage Grosskreutz, correct?
Yes.
With regard to Joseph Rosenbaum, you fired four shots at him, correct?
Yes.
You intended to kill him, correct?
I didn't intend to kill him. I intended to stop the person who was attacking me and trying to steal my gun.
Prosecutor Binger then pointed out that since the night it happened, this is the first time he has told his story. Kyle's attorney, Mark Richards, objected, and Judge Schroeder sustained the objection.
Since August 25th, 2020, you've had the benefit of watching countless videos of your actions that night, correct?
I've seen certain videos, not all of them. I've seen the majority of them actually here during the trial.
You've also had the opportunity to read articles people have written, interviews, things like that, about what happened that night, correct?
I do my best to avoid what people write on the internet. A majority of it's not true.
You have also sat here through 8 days of trial, correct?
Yes.
And you've had the opportunity to watch all of the videos that have been played in this trial?
Yes.
Sir, if you could please let me finish my question before answering. And I will do my best to let you finish your answer before I go on to the next question. Fair?
Yes.
You've also had the opportunity to listen to the testimony of all 30-some witnesses that have testified in this trial so far, correct?
Yes.
And after all of that, now you are telling us your side of the story, correct?
Correct.
I'm going to ask you folks to go in the library for just a second.
Judge Schroeder asked the jury to step out. Richards, Kyle's attorney, told the judge that Prosecutor Binger was commenting on his client's right to remain silent. Binger said he was just making the point that after hearing everything in the case, now Kyle is tailoring his story to what has already been introduced.
The problem is, this is a grave constitutional violation for you to talk about the defendant's silence. And that is, and you're right. You're right on the borderline, and you may be over, but it better stop.
Understood.
This is. I can't think of the case, the initial case on it, but it's this is not permitted.
The jury came back, and Prosecutor Binger continued his cross-examination of Kyle. They went back and forth, discussing Kyle's knowledge of gun laws, before Judge Schroeder interrupted, calling it not relevant and saying he would instruct the jury what the laws actually are in the state of Wisconsin. Then Prosecutor Binger asked why Kyle wanted an AR-15, to which Kyle said he just thought it looked cool.
It resembled the types of weapons that are used in first-person shooter video games, correct?
I don't really play first-person shooter video games. I have, but I believe there's a variety of guns, including shotguns, pistols. There's guns in video games that resemble all guns.
Isn't it true when you would hang out with Dominic Black, you'd play Call of Duty and other first-person shooter video games?
Sometimes.
And those are games in which you use weapons like AR-15s to pretty much shoot anybody who comes at you, correct?
It's a video game where two players are playing together. I don't really understand the meaning of your question, to be honest.
Isn't one of the things people do in these video games try and kill everyone else with your guns?
Yeah, in the video game, it's just a video game. It's not real life.
Prosecutor Binger then showed a photo of Kyle's profile on the social media app TikTok.
That was a TikTok account that you had during the summer of 2020, correct?
Yes.
And it says your name on there, Kyle?
Yes.
Your username on TikTok was Four Doors More Whores?
Yes.
And that's a picture of you there with your AR-15, correct?
Yes.
And underneath that, you have put on your profile the phrase, bruh, B-R-U-H, I'm just trying, T-R-Y-N-A, be famous. Is that correct?
Yes.
You're the one who wrote that?
Yes.
Under questioning, Kyle agreed that he can't use deadly force to protect property or to stop someone from starting a fire.
So you understand that there's a difference between using deadly force to protect yourself and using it to protect property, correct?
Yes.
And you'd agree with me that you're not allowed to use deadly force to protect property, correct?
Yes.
But yet you have previously indicated that you wished you had your AR-15 to protect someone's property, correct?
I'm going to ask you to go into the library again for a moment, please.
Judge Schroeder again asked the jury to leave the courtroom. Before I play the audio of what happened next, a little context. Prior to the trial, as is customary, the judge will rule on items of evidence that the prosecution wants to present. He'll say if it's admissible or inadmissible. In this case, the prosecution had wanted to introduce a video of Kyle that had been taken 15 days prior to the shootings. Kyle can be seen watching some men leave a CVS store and saying that he wished he could use his gun so he could shoot them because he believed they were shoplifters. At the time, Judge Schroeder had said that he had a bias towards denial, that he didn't believe that it was relevant, but that he might reassess it at trial. The questions Prosecutor Binger were just asking appeared to be going towards asking about that video. Once the jury was out of the courtroom, Richards, Kyle's attorney, told the judge that Binger was either forgetting the court's prior ruling or attempting to provoke a mistrial.
He knows he can't go into this, and he's asking the questions. I asked the court to strongly admonish him, and the next time it happens, I'll be asking for a mistrial with prejudice. He's an experienced attorney, and he knows better.
Mr. Binger?
First of all, Your Honor, this was the subject of a motion. I'm well aware of that. And the court left the door open.
For me, not for you.
My understanding of
you should have come and asked for reconsideration. You did on the one motion, and in fact, I granted your motion for reconsideration.
That was not our motion.
I granted.
We did not move
that
to reconsider.
That was their motion.
We have not filed any motions to reconsider in this case.
That was their motion for reconsideration, which I denied. But I said I denied it. Or I indicated a bias towards denial is what I did. Held it open with a bias towards denial. Why would you think that that made it okay for you without any advance notice to bring this matter before the jury? I was astonished when you began your examination by commenting on the defendant's post-arrest silence. That's basic law. It's been basic law in this country for 40 years, 50 years. I have no idea why you would do something like that. And it gives, I'll leave it at that. So I don't know what you're up to.
May I respond?
Yes.
Prosecutor Binger responded that he believes there was evidence presented at trial that opened the door for it to come in. Judge Schroeder raised his voice and said Binger should know better than to just introduce evidence that had already been excluded. He also called it propensity evidence and said he saw no similarity between saying you wish you had your gun when you don't have it and what happened in this case. He told Binger that it wasn't coming in, no matter what you think, he said. The jury returned and questioning continued. But after the lunch break, Kyle's attorneys made a motion for a mistrial with prejudice, meaning that if granted, the case would be dismissed and Kyle could not be retried. Corey Sharafasi cited Binger's questioning of Kyle, leading to Kyle's prior comments about the alleged CVS shoplifters, which had been excluded. He also cited Binger's questioning about Kyle's constitutional right to remain silent. He said he believes the misconduct was in bad faith, something Prosecutor Binger denied.
I thought, this is my good faith explanation to you, and if you want to yell at me, you can. My good faith feeling this morning after watching that testimony was you had left the door open a little bit, now we had something new, and I was going to probe it.
I don't believe you. There better not be another incident. I'll take the motion under advisement. And you can respond. When you say that you were acting in good faith, I don't believe that, okay? Let's proceed. Everybody in good faith.
Judge Schroeder said he doesn't believe Binger and that he would take the motion under advisement, leaving it open. Prosecutor Binger then asked about another piece of evidence that had been ruled inadmissible prior to trial.
I do have another item that I want to raise before the jury comes in. And raise it with you. There was another ex motion with regard to the defendant being at Pudgy's Bar after a court appearance in January, in which he poses for selfies wearing a shirt that says free as fuck. I would like to ask the defendant if he posed for selfies after a court appearance with members of the public wearing that shirt. I do not intend to talk about who those people were, what groups they were affiliated with, or anything along those lines. But I believe that it is relevant when the defendant goes to a bar after a court appearance and poses for selfies wearing a shirt like that. I think it is relevant to some of the issues that have come up in this case. For example, his remorse or lack of remorse, his utter disregard for human life. Those are things that I think it comes into play, because I think that behavior is not consistent with someone who has a regard for human life. The jury has already watched him break down on the stand with emotion. I'd like to probe how heartfelt and sincere these emotions are when you go to a bar and you pose for selfies with people, when you're out on bond in a first-degree intentional homicide trial wearing a free-as-fuck shirt.
Corey Sharafasi argued that nothing had been said that opened the door for that, and the judge agreed. When cross-examination started again, Kyle agreed that he hasn't seen any video that shows Joseph threatening him, nor did Joseph touch him at all the entire night. He said Joseph was wearing a blue bandana over his face the first time he threatened him, and then had his red shirt over his head when he was chasing him. Prosecutor Binger asked how he knew it was the same guy.
His appearance, the shorts, his height.
But in both of those instances that you've described, he's got something covering his face, either the blue bandana in one instance or the red shirt in a different instance, correct?
He was wearing the red shirt when he chased me around his head.
So you remember that from the second time that you say he threatened you?
Yes.
And you thought to yourself, this is the same guy?
Yes.
Kyle said, for the most part, it was only Joseph Rosenbaum who was threatening, that there was really no friction between his group and the protesters/rioters that night. Prosecutor Binger pointed out that he had told Richie McGinnis the other guys in his group were there to protect him.
So at this moment in time, you don't think there's a hostile crowd, you're there to help people, and yet you're going to run out there with the AR-15. I don't understand why you felt that you were going to be in danger if you're out in a friendly, what you think is a friendly crowd, helping them.
I didn't say I didn't think they were hostile. I didn't think they were hostile towards us.
Okay, so they're not hostile to you and you're going to go help them. Why do you need the gun when you go out there?
I need the gun because if I had to protect myself because somebody attacked me.
Why would you think anybody would do that?
I don't know.
But you clearly planned on it. You were prepared for it. You thought it was going to happen.
No, I didn't.
That's the whole reason you brought the gun, isn't it?
I brought the gun to protect myself.
Prosecutor Binger showed parts of the drone video, zoomed in, that he said showed Kyle putting the fire extinguisher down and raising his weapon. This would be right around his encounter with Joseph Rosenbaum. Kyle said he couldn't tell from the video. Binger played it a few more times, and Kyle said it doesn't look like he raised his rifle. It looks like his shoulder is up, but his rifle is pointed downward.
So your testimony today under oath is that you have no memory of raising and pointing your rifle when you first got to that location. Is that right?
Yes.
You see yourself put the fire extinguisher down?
I see myself drop it, yes.
Prosecutor Binger played another part, slowed down, where Joseph is running behind Kyle. And Kyle turns around.
In this video, at this point, Mr. Rittenhouse, you have turned around and you are pointing your weapon at Mr. Rosenbaum, correct?
Yes.
And there is a point. Let's continue the video, please. Pause.
There's a point where Mr. Rosenbaum is running after you, where he raises his hands and leaps up in the air, correct?
I wouldn't say he leaped in the air. I'd say he continued to run at me. He just threw his hands up.
He threw both of his hands up in the air, right?
Yes.
And you could see that he was unarmed, correct?
Yes.
Please continue the video. Pause.
Joseph Rosenbaum never touched you in any way during that incident, correct?
He touched my gun.
He didn't touch your body in any way, did he?
No.
He didn't kick you?
No.
He didn't punch you?
No.
Other than that plastic bag, he didn't throw anything at you?
No.
He didn't have a gun on him?
No.
He didn't have a knife on him?
No.
He didn't have a chain on him?
No.
He didn't have a bat on him?
No.
He didn't have any weapon of any kind, correct?
Other than him grabbing my gun, no.
Well, he didn't have possession of that gun. You did, correct?
I was holding it, yes.
And it was strapped to your body, correct?
Yes.
At all times during this incident, you retained possession of your AR-15, correct?
Yes.
Prosecutor Binger played another video. This one was normal speed.
Right before Mr. Rosenbaum disappears behind that car, did you see him jump up in the air with his hands out?
No, I saw him do something like this. Like
that was a reaction to you pointing the gun at him, correct?
Yes, but he kept running at me, so it didn't deter him.
But it slowed him down a little bit. He does this sort of jump with his hands in the air when you're pointing the gun at him, right?
No, he continues to gain speed on me.
Okay. Now let's play Exhibit 86, please. All right, pause it. Did you slow down?
Did I?
Yeah.
I turned around, and I may have slowed down a little bit.
It looks like you slowed down before you even turned around.
Yes.
You've characterized Mr. Rosenbaum as advancing on you, speeding up towards you, but you actually slowed down, didn't you?
Because of the people around the cars, yes.
Prosecutor Binger asked what the risk was of death or great bodily harm at the moment he killed Joseph Rosenbaum.
If I would have let Mr. Rosenbaum take my firearm from me, he would have used it and killed me with it and probably killed more people if I would have let him get my gun.
Mr. Rosenbaum never said anything to you about taking your gun, did he?
He didn't say anything, but he tried to take my gun.
And whoever's got that gun is a threat to everyone else?
If he would have taken my gun, he would have used it against me.
As Prosecutor Binger continued questioning him about his intent with shooting Joseph Rosenbaum, the defense objected and said it was badgering. Judge Schroeder said it did seem argumentative.
The point I'm trying to get at, Mr. Rittenhouse, is that wasn't like an accidental turning around and it just happens to be pointing in his direction, much like I'm just happen to, you know, wave this around. You made an intentional decision in the middle of that incident to turn and point the gun at Mr. Rosenbaum, correct?
Yes.
And you can understand why that would make someone fearful for their life, right?
But he continued to chase me after, so no, I can't.
It didn't work.
It didn't stop Mr. Rosenbaum from chasing me.
Prosecutor Binger pointed out that afterwards, Kyle didn't offer any help, even though he had told everyone he was an EMT and had his medic bag with him. Kyle said if the crowd hadn't started chasing and screaming at him, he would have stayed to help. Prosecutor Binger played another video where, after the shooting, Kyle is running and someone yells, "Why did you shoot him?" To which Kyle responds, "He had a gun."
At the time, I was a little dazed and I was thinking of Mr. Zeminski with the pistol he had at the Duramax.
So you shot Mr. Rosenbaum because Joshua Zeminski had a pistol?
No.
You don't get to shoot someone else. You don't get to shoot someone else because someone else has a gun, right?
No.
But you told the crowd he had a gun, didn't you?
That's what I said.
And that wasn't true. Mr. Rosenbaum never had a gun, right?
He didn't have a gun.
In another video, Kyle says, "I'm going to the police. I didn't shoot anyone." Kyle agreed on the stand that wasn't true, but said he was being chased by a mob and doesn't remember that interaction very well. After he fell and the unknown man came up and kicked him, Kyle said he fired off 2 shots.
In this moment, you're making a deliberate decision to pull the trigger twice, correct?
Yes.
That wasn't an accident. That was your conscious decision, wasn't it?
Yes.
And you're firing an AR-15 at close range to this individual, correct?
Yes.
And you knew full well that if you hit him with one or both of those bullets, it could kill him, right?
There's that possibility.
If you hit him with one of those, wouldn't you agree it's a pretty strong likelihood you're going to kill him?
I don't know.
Did that even factor into your mind at that point? Did you even care whether you were going to kill him or not?
I didn't want to have to kill anybody. I was being attacked. That's why I shot him.
When he shot Anthony Huber, he agreed all Anthony had in his hand was his skateboard. That he hit me with in the head twice, he said.
And you intended to pull the trigger at that moment with your AR-15, correct?
Yes.
That wasn't an accident.
No.
That was your deliberate decision, correct?
Yes.
And you knew that the way that gun was positioned, you were going to fire that bullet right into his chest, right?
He was attacking me, so I pulled the trigger.
And you knew that when you pulled that trigger, that bullet was going to go right into his chest, didn't you?
I can't say. I don't know where the bullet would have went exactly.
The end of that gun was pointed directly at his chest when you pulled the trigger, correct?
Yes.
And you knew that, correct?
Yes.
And you still pulled the trigger, didn't you?
Yes.
Prosecutor Binger played the video again and stopped it when Gage approached him.
Can you help me understand, Mr. Rittenhouse, why Gage Grosskreutz, with a pistol in his hand, is a threat to kill you, but you, with an AR-15 pointed at him, is not a threat to kill him at this moment? Can you help me understand that?
I've been attacked by several people, and he decided to come and point a gun at my head. Well, first...
He hasn't done that yet, has he?
No.
So again, I ask you, in this moment, you told us Gage Grosskreutz is a threat to you right now.
Yes.
He's got a pistol not aimed at you. You've got an AR-15 aimed at him. Why is he more of a threat to you than you are to him?
Because he was moving at me with a gun in his hand.
This is right after you've killed Anthony Huber, correct?
Yes.
Right after you fired two shots at almost point-blank range at the man running towards the camera right now and missing him, correct?
Yes.
And you're telling us Gage Grosskreutz is the real threat at this moment?
Yes.
He agreed that afterwards he decided to get out of there as fast as he could. The defense also called Dr. John Black, a use of force expert, to the stand, who testified that the shootings all happened within a minute and 20 seconds. He said it's hard to capture the complete experience in photos and videos. After both the prosecution and defense rested their cases, Judge Schroeder dismissed another charge against Kyle, the misdemeanor charge of possessing a firearm as a minor. The final remaining counts would be intentional, reckless, and attempted homicide, as well as reckless endangerment. Before deliberations began, Judge Schroeder asked Kyle to randomly draw from a jar the numbers of 6 jurors who would be dismissed, leaving the 12 who would be deciding his fate. Judge Schroeder defended his decision to do that after several media outlets reported it. He also addressed criticisms about how he did not allow those who were shot by Kyle Rittenhouse to be referred to as victims during the trial.
Is it so difficult to just use the term complaining witness instead of prejudging what the jury is here to determine as to whether there's a victim and whether there was a crime committed? So I don't know what I'll leave that comment at that. And then finally, I'm now reading about how bizarre and unusual it was to have the defendant pick the numbers out of the tumbler yesterday. And I would admit that I don't know that there's a large number of courts that do that, maybe not any. I do it because of an incident that I had in a case I tried in Racine. Oh, I'm going to say I estimated 20 years ago it could have been less than that. It could have been more. But it was a big case. I think it was a murder case, but I'm not sure. And there was a black defendant, and there were 13 jurors, one of whom was black. And when the clerk, the government official, drew the name out of the tumbler, it was a black, the only black. There was nothing wrong with it. It was all okay. But what do they talk about? Optics nowadays? Is that the word for things? That was a bad optic, I thought. I think people feel better when they have control. So ever since that case, I have, ever since that case, I've had an almost universal policy of having the defendant do the picks. Well, it had nothing to do with anybody's race or anything like that.
Judge Schroeder also said he will think long and hard before allowing cameras in his courtroom for live streaming again. The jury deliberated for more than 24 hours before finding Kyle Rittenhouse not guilty on all charges. And that's all for this episode. If you'd like to hear these episodes without the ads and hear additional bonus episodes, check out my Patreon options at courtjunkie.com/support. You can also follow Court Junkie on Instagram at Court Junkie, on Twitter at Court Junkie Pod, or you can email me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. Thanks again for listening. Until next time. You all know I'm a big fan of the Jordan Harbinger Show, and I think you court junkies will love it too. Here's a preview of one of his episodes with Frank Barassa.
You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with the world's best counterfeiter. How long does it take to print $250 million?
5 months. It needs to be worthwhile. It's going to need to be perfect.
12,500 kilos or over 8 Toyota Camrys or 6 Ford F-150s. That is multiple metric tons of cash. You must have been stoked, man, because you knew you were going to put $20 bills all over all of that and then just never work again.
Yes. By design, there are people specifically looking for you all the time. This is all they do. You can tell them whatever you want. They're not dummies. I mean, this is as high as it goes. This is top of the line.
For more on how Frank Barassa printed his own fortune and got away with it, check out episode 488 on The Jordan Harbinger Show, anywhere you get your podcasts.
If you are among the majority who use the same password on multiple accounts, credential stuffing is a cyber attack you should understand. Credential stuffing is when cyber criminals get your username and password off the dark web, try to gain access to your accounts, and steal your private information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our information at risk on the internet. In an instant, a cybercriminal could steal what's yours, sometimes even harm your finances, your credit, your reputation. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they'll send you an alert. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can help protect what's yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year at LifeLock.com/court. That's LifeLock.com/court for 25% off.